Okay, so have you ever like bought something, you're really excited about it, you think this is going to work great, and then it just totally fails and you're like, "Wow, like what can I even do?"
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, it happens all the time, right? And especially these days with like, the stuff we all rely on is getting more and more complicated. And so it's like when things go wrong, it can be really confusing to figure out like, well, who is actually responsible for this mess, you
Yeah,
know?
exactly. Like sometimes it's pretty clear cut, but sometimes you're like, wait, was that like just bad luck? Or was the product itself actually like dangerous somehow? You know what I mean?
For sure. And that's where things can get like pretty legally tricky. Like you start thinking about lawsuits and stuff, right?
Right. And that's exactly what we're going to get into today. We're doing a deep dive into this super interesting case. It's called Heaton v. Ford Motor Co. It went all the way up to the Oregon Supreme Court back in 1967. So it's like a pretty old case, but it still has a big impact on how we think about like who's responsible when products fail and cause harm, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of a classic case for anyone who's like, interested in product liability law, like so many of the concepts that we still use today, you can trace them back to this case, you know? And it's a good one for all you law students out there because it really highlights how courts think about these issues, like how they try to balance the interests of consumers and manufacturers, you know?
Okay, so let's set the stage here a bit. So
Okay.
it's 1967, and this guy, Mr. Heaton, he buys a brand new Ford pickup truck, right? And this truck, it wasn't just like any old truck. It was actually marketed as being tough and rugged. You know, like you could take it off-road, no problem, kind of a
Yeah.
deal.
Like those classic Ford truck ads, they always show them like, climbing mountains and going through mud and stuff like that,
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Heaton's driving this truck down the highway. And he hits a rock, not like a huge boulder or anything, but like, a decent-sized rock, maybe 5 or 6 inches across. And the truck seems fine. He keeps driving for like another 35 miles or so.
Wow, that's pretty far. I mean, like you'd think if something was seriously wrong, you'd notice it right away.
Yeah, you'd think so. But then all of a sudden, the truck just veers off the road and flips over. And when they go to check out the wreckage, guess what they find? One of the wheels has totally come apart. Like the outer part of the wheel, it completely separated from the center part, which is often called the spider.
Oof. That's not good.
No, it's not. And unfortunately, Heaton gets injured in the accident.
So that's when things get legal, right?
You got it. So Heaton decides to sue Ford. He figures, hey, I just bought this brand new truck. It's supposed to be tough and rugged. And then a rock basically totals it. There must be something wrong with the wheel itself, right?
Right? He's thinking there's got to be some kind of defect, something that made it unreasonably dangerous, you know?
Exactly. And that's where this idea of strict liability comes in. Now, I know this can get a bit technical, but it's really important to grasp this concept, especially for those of you who are studying law, because it comes up all the time in product liability cases.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? Actually, maybe we should take a step back for a second, just make sure everyone's on the same page here. Like, when we talk about strict liability, what does that even mean?
Okay, good point. So in a regular negligence case, like if someone spills coffee on you at a coffee shop or something, you have to prove that the person who spilled the coffee was actually negligent. Like they weren't paying attention or they were being careless. You know what I mean?
Right, you got to show that they did something wrong or that they didn't do something they should have done.
But with strict liability, it's different. You don't have to prove that the manufacturer was careless or negligent. All you have to prove is that the product itself was defective, and that defect made it unreasonably dangerous.
And there's this specific section of the law that deals with this. It's section 402A of the Restatement, second, of torts.
Yeah.
It's like, kind of a guidebook for lawyers and judges that explains all these different legal concepts.
Right. And this section, it basically says that manufacturers can be held liable for selling a product that's in a defective condition, unreasonably dangerous to the user, even if they weren't directly negligent in making the product.
So basically, it's like if you sell something that's messed up in a way that makes it dangerous to use, you're on the hook, even if you didn't mean for it to be that way.
Exactly. And that brings us to like the heart of this case, because the big question in Heaton v. Ford was this wheel actually defective?
Right. And was it defective in a way that made it unreasonably dangerous, like more dangerous than an ordinary consumer would expect it to be?
Right, because we all know that like products can fail sometimes, right? Like things break down, wear and tear happens. It's just part of life. But the law is really concerned with those situations where a product fails in a way that's totally unexpected and poses a greater risk than you would normally anticipate.
And that's where this idea of the consumer expectations test comes in. It's like, if you buy a toaster, you expect it to make toast. You don't expect it to like burst into flames and burn your house down, right?
Exactly. So if product fails in a way that goes beyond those normal expectations, then the courts might say, okay, this was unreasonably dangerous, and the manufacturer could be held liable.
And that's what Heaton was trying to argue. He was saying, look, this wheel shouldn't have just fallen apart like that after hitting a rock. That's not what a reasonable person would expect from a brand new truck, especially one that's supposed to be so tough and rugged.
Yeah, it does seem kind of strange, right? Like, you'd think a truck wheel could handle hitting a rock without completely disintegrating.
But here's the thing, and this is where things get tricky for Heaton. He didn't actually have any direct evidence to prove that the wheel was defective when he bought the truck. You know what I mean? Like, he couldn't point to a specific manufacturing flaw or a bad design or anything like that.
So all he had was, like, the fact that the wheel fell apart after the accident.
Pretty much. And the fact that, you know, the truck hadn't had any problems before this incident. I mean, it had already been driven for, like, 7,000 miles, mostly on highways, and there hadn't been any issues with the wheels or anything.
Okay, so that kind of weakens his argument, right? If the truck was fine for that long, you'd think the wheel was probably okay to begin with.
Yeah, it makes it harder to argue that there was some kind of hidden defect that was just waiting to cause problems.
So what did Ford say in their defense?
Well, they basically argued that, hey, look, hitting a rock at highway speed that can do some serious damage to a vehicle, you know? They said it was totally possible that the impact from the rock was what caused the wheel to fail, not some pre-existing defect.
And that seems like a pretty reasonable argument too, right? I mean, things break when you hit them hard enough.
Yeah, exactly. And here's where things get really interesting. And this was kind of a turning point in the case. Even Heaton's own expert witness, the person he brought in to, like, you know, testify about the wheel and stuff, even that guy said that he didn't think the wheel was defective.
Wait a minute. His own expert witness said that. That seems like a pretty big problem for his case.
Oh, yeah. It was a huge blow to his argument. I mean, if your own expert is saying that there's no defect, then it becomes really tough to convince a court that there was one.
Okay, so I'm guessing the court sided with Ford then.
You got it. The Oregon Supreme Court, they ended up upholding the original decision to dismiss the case. They basically said, look, there's just not enough evidence here to prove that the wheel was defective.
So they were saying that Heaton couldn't just assume the wheel was defective just because it broke after hitting a rock.
Exactly. They said that juries can't just speculate or guess about these things. There needs to be solid evidence to support the claim that there was actually a defect.
And this gets to, like, a really important distinction that the court made in this case. They talked about the difference between strict liability and absolute liability.
Right, because the court was worried that if they let this case go forward without strong evidence of a defect, it would basically turn manufacturers into insurers. You know, like, they'd be responsible for absolutely anything that went wrong with their products, no matter what.
So they were trying to draw a line between saying, hey, manufacturers need to make safe products, but they're not automatically responsible for every single thing that could possibly happen.
Exactly. And the court even had this, like, you know, kind of famous quote about this. They said, to allow the jury to decide purely on its own intuition would convert strict liability into absolute liability.
Yeah, that quote really captures their concern, right? They didn't want to open the floodgates to lawsuits where people could just say, my product broke, therefore it must have been defective.
Right. They wanted to make sure that there was some kind of, like, you know, actual proof before holding manufacturers responsible.
But there was a dissenting opinion in this case, right?
Like,
one of the judges disagreed with the majority.
Yeah, you're right. Justice O'Connell, he had a different take on the whole thing. And his dissent, it actually raises some really interesting points about consumer expectations and, you know, what we can reasonably expect from the products we buy.
Okay, so what was his argument?
Well, he basically said that, you know, the court should have taken into account the way Ford was marketing this truck. You know, remember, they were really emphasizing how tough and rugged it was, how you could take it off-road and all that.
Yeah, and that it was built for tough.
Exactly. And O'Connell was saying that those marketing claims, they create certain expectations in the minds of consumers, right? Like, if you buy a truck that's advertised as being able to handle rough terrain, then you'd expect it to be able to withstand hitting a rock without the wheel completely coming apart.
Yeah, I can see that point. Like, if a company is telling you their product can do something, you're going to believe them to some extent.
Right. And so O'Connell was saying that even if Heaton didn't have specific evidence of a manufacturing defect, the fact that the wheel failed in such a dramatic way after a relatively minor impact, that alone should have been enough to raise questions about whether the truck was truly as tough as Ford claimed it to be.
So he was basically saying that the consumer's understanding of what the product should be able to do based on its marketing That should also be considered when deciding if something was defective or not.
Exactly. He thought that the jury should have been allowed to take those consumer expectations into account, even without, like, you know, hard evidence of a specific flaw in the wheel itself.
Okay, so even though the court ultimately sided with Ford this case, it really highlights this ongoing tension in product liability law. You know, like, how do we balance the need for proof with the idea that consumers should be able to trust that the products they buy are safe and will perform as expected?
Yeah, it's a tough question for sure. And it's something that courts are still grappling with today, you know? Especially as products are getting more and more complex, it can be really difficult for consumers to know exactly what to expect and how to prove that something was defective if it fails.
Right. In this case, it kind of helped to establish a framework for how we think about defects.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are the different ways that a product can be considered defective?
Yeah, over time, you know, legal experts, they've kind of boiled it down to this three-prong test for identifying defects, and it basically outlines three main categories.
Okay, so what are the three prongs?
So first, you've got manufacturing defects. This is like when there's a mistake made during the production process, you know, maybe a part is installed incorrectly, or there's some kind of, like, you know, impurity in the materials or something.
So it's like a one-off problem with that specific product.
Exactly. Then you've got design defects. This is where the problem is with the overall design of the product itself, like the blueprints are flawed or the engineering is bad. And so even if the product is manufactured perfectly, it's still going to be dangerous.
Okay, so that's like a systemic problem with the whole product line.
Right. And then the third prong is what we've been talking about this whole time failure to perform as safely as ordinary consumers would expect, which is closely tied to that consumer expectations test.
Right. So even if there's not a specific manufacturing or design defect, if the product just doesn't live up to the reasonable expectations of consumers, then that could also be grounds for a liability claim.
Exactly. And so you can see how Heaton v. Ford, it kind of fits into that third prong. You know, Heaton was arguing that the wheel failed to perform as safely as he would have expected based on the way the truck was marketed.
Right. But the court ultimately decided that he didn't have enough evidence to prove that the failure was due to something other than, you know, the impact with the rock.
And so this case, it really emphasizes the importance of evidence in product liability cases. You know, like, it's not enough to just say that something broke. You have to be able to show why it broke and that it broke because of some kind of defect that existed when the product left the manufacturer's control.
So basically, you need to be able to connect the dots between the accident and the defect.
Okay.
You can't just assume the product was defective just because something bad happened.
Exactly. And that's a really important takeaway for all you law students out there. If you're ever dealing with a product liability case, you need to focus on building a strong case that shows a clear link between the alleged defect and the harm that was caused.
Right. And this case, it also shows how tricky it can be to apply that consumer expectations test.
Yeah.
You know, like, what exactly are those reasonable expectations and how do we determine if a product has fallen short of them?
Yeah, it's not always easy to say for sure. And, you know, in this case, the majority of the court, they weren't convinced that hitting a rock should automatically be considered an unreasonable failure for a truck wheel. But Justice O'Connell, he thought differently, and he made some good points about how marketing can influence those expectations.
So it's a complex issue for sure, and it's something that courts are still trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how much weight should we give to consumer expectations versus the need for hard evidence of a defect?
And that's a question that's become even more complicated in recent years with the rise of, like, you know, super high-tech products and really sophisticated marketing campaigns.
Right, because, like, if a company is constantly telling you that their product's, like, the best thing ever and it can do all these amazing things, then your expectations are going to be pretty high.
Totally. And so if that product then fails to live up to those expectations, are you more likely to think it was defective? It's a tough question.
Yeah, it is. So for all of you listening, especially if you're interested in law or consumer protection, I want to leave you with this thought. What do you think about this balance between consumer expectations and the need for evidence in product liability cases? Like, in today's world where we have all these incredibly complex products and companies are making all sorts of claims about what their products can do, How do we decide what's a reasonable expectation and when a product has crossed the line into being truly defective?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that I think we're going to be grappling with for a long time to come, you know?
Totally. All right. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Heaton v. Ford Motor Co. I hope you found it interesting and informative. And maybe it'll give you something to think about next time you're using a product and you wonder, like, What if this thing just totally failed on me?
Yeah, food for thought for sure. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.